indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Nitz.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nobile.
Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor Olmert is present.
Thank you very much. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the June 2nd council meeting and the June 9th council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion for approval?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 2, proclamation recognizing September 12th through September 19th as Palm Coast and the Flagler Beach's Senior Games Week. Mr. McGuire. We've got a host of people receiving the proclamation.
Okay, you guys suck that gut in.
Before you begin, Mr. Wire, Mr. Mastin, why don't you introduce your
entourage?
It's an extraordinary team of people. We're particularly pleased that Dr. Dennis Alter, our star orthopedic surgeon in our community, is here with us today. In addition to that, we've got Tony Papandrea, who is our foundation board chair, as well as a hospital board member. Of course, John Subers, everybody knows, and Joni Hunt, I think, behind us. Anybody else I'm missing?
Bill.
Oh, Bill Toll snuck around behind me with the camera. Ginger is brand new to Palm Coast, and I have met Ginger already this morning and ecstatic with the assets that she brings to the table.
Whereas the city of Palm Coast presents its second annual series of Olympic-style competitive sports and games for men and women aged 50 and over, and whereas Florida Hospital Flagler Orthopedic and Sports Medicine are the presenting sponsors of the Palm Coast and Flagler Beaches Senior Games, and whereas the Palm Coast and the Flagler Beaches Senior Games will be held on the week of September 12th through 19th, 2015, and will continue to be held on an annual basis, and whereas Palm Coast and the Flagler Beaches local senior games are sanctioned by the Florida Sports Foundation and a qualifier for the Florida Senior Games State Championships, and whereas the city of Palm Coast will be welcoming seniors from across Flagler County, Florida, and the United States, and whereas the Palm Coast and Flagler Beaches Senior Games promotes friendly competition, fellowship, health and wellness, an active lifestyle, and volunteerism, and whereas the city of Palm Coast recognizes the value of this program and commends the staff members, senior citizens, and volunteers who have given so generously of their time and effort in this worthy cause, and whereas our best wishes are extended to all the competitors who will strive to achieve their personal goals here in Palm Coast in the Flagler Beaches Senior Games, now, therefore, be it proclaimed, the Palm Coast Mayor and City Council declare the week of September 12th through 19th, 2015, as Palm Coast and the Flagler Beaches Senior Games Week. Signed, the 16th day of June 2015, City of Palm Coast, Florida, John Nitz, Mayor.
I do. As a proud representative of Flagler Sports Medicine and Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, I like to say we're proud to be a part of this. Sounds like a lot of fun and great for our community. And I'm here helping represent Dr. David Gay and Jeffrey Keene. And this ought to be a lot of fun. Thank you.
Just a brief comment about the importance of improving health status. I believe that the people in our community benefit any time we can put together programs that help people be more active. In a world where our mission compels us to improve health status, I believe that this is a partnership with the City of Palm Coast to help improve health status, and for that we're very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can we get a group shot?
Yes.
Tony, I want to thank you for getting your boot on the right foot. He and I have matching footwear this morning.
Let it be known, I do not mean less.
All right,
push the kids to pull the banner so it's nice.
Happy so you can win it.
Perfect. We do a few, so just keep smiling. We'll get one more. One, two, three. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You too.
Agenda item number two, proclamation recognizes the month of July as Park and Recreation Month. Ms. Shipley.
So I get to do the fun one.
They're all fun.
Whereas parks and recreation programs are an integral part of communities throughout this country, including the city of Palm Coast, and whereas our parks and recreation are vitally important to establishing and maintaining the quality of life in our communities, ensuring the health of all citizens, and contributing to the economic and environmental well-being of the community and region. And whereas parks and recreation programs build healthy, active communities that aid in the prevention of chronic disease, provide therapeutic recreation services for those who are mentally or physically disabled, and also improve the mental and emotional health of all citizens. And whereas parks and recreation programs increase a community's economic prosperity through increased property values, expansion of the local tax base, increased tourism, and the attraction and retention of businesses and crime reduction. And whereas parks and recreation areas are fundamental to the environmental well-being of our community. And whereas parks and natural recreation areas improve water quality, protect groundwater, prevent flooding, improve the quality of the air we breathe, provide vegetative buffers to development, and provide and produce habitat for wildlife. And whereas our parks and natural recreation areas ensure the ecological beauty of our community and provide a place for children and adults to connect with nature and recreate the outdoors. And whereas the U.S. House of Representatives has designated July as Parks and Recreation Month, and whereas the City of Palm Coast recognizes the benefits derived from parks and recreation resources, now, therefore, be it proclaimed, the City Council of the City of Palm Coast does hereby proclaim the month of July as Park and Recreation Month, signed this 16th day of June, 2015, Mayor John Nets.
Speech.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. I'm sure y'all noticed on your way in today we're deep into summer camp. So first, I wanted to thank you for recognizing July and Parks and Recreation Month. I also want to thank you for your continued support of recreation in our city. Your vision recognizing parks and recreation opportunities as an essential service to those in our community is acknowledgement to our profession that we do strengthen communities, lending to the overall health and social well-being of our citizens. Again, I thank you. This year's theme for Parks and Rec Month is 80s style. So we are going to flash back a little bit, and I'm going to show you the video we did last year because it's such an exceptional video, and I think it speaks well to what we do in parks and recreation.
Palm Coast Parks and Recreation sure has a lot of things going on all the time.
They sure do. They really have something for everyone. Even my family, friends, and neighbors participate.
Wouldn't it be great if Parks and Rec had a video showing all they do?
You know what? I think they do.
Thank you.
walk through life. Every day is a new beginning. Shine your light. It's your day and the world is waiting. Move along to the song singing in your soul. Feel the beat, grab your hands, let's take control. All you need, all you want, are you ready to find your way?
My staff is working, so I'm doing this on my own today. Just to recap some of the events that are coming up in July, we're going to start actually a little bit early this year. On June 26th is our dive-in movie at Frida Zamba Pool. The gates will open at 8 o'clock. It's a $1 admission, and people could come in and float on their rafts while we show the movie. This June movie is Ghostbusters, keeping with the theme of 80s style. Next is, we'll kick off the month of July with our fireworks in the park on July 3rd. The fireworks will begin at 9, but there is a pre-fireworks event hosted by the Flagler Education Foundation, which will begin at 5 o'clock. They'll have games and activities and music and all kinds of good stuff for kids and families to enjoy. July 10th, our movie in the park, which is at, the July 3rd fireworks are at Central Park and Town Center. The movie in the park, again at Central Park and Town Center, will be Back to the Future, keeping with the theme of flashback to the 80s. And then next is our Keep on Food Truckin', which is July 21st at Central Park in Town Center. We'll have music, all 70s and 80s themed music, so if that was your decades, please come out and enjoy it. We're also going to have our ballroom dance instructor there who will be doing some dance instruction of some dance moves from that era. So if you always wanted to learn, I don't know what was popular, maybe country line dancing, come out then. We'll have also activities for the kids and possibly electronic bull, mechanical bull. So keeping with Gillies and, that whole urban cowboy. So after that, we'll host our ice cream social at our Frida Zamba swimming pool on July 24th. Anybody who comes into the pool that day will get a free ice cream cone or sundae. And we'll end the month with our annual Tour to Palm Coast, which is our bike ride through some of our trails, led by our own Bill Butler, who will begin the tour at Linear Park, and it will travel through Waterfront and some other areas, exposing some of our residents to the wonderful trail system we have here in our city. I also want to mention to everybody, don't forget we have our Frida Zamba swimming pool open 7 days a week. Our Palm Harbor Golf Club open again 7 days a week, and our Palm Coast Tennis Center. Please visit all these wonderful recreation amenities we have in our city available for all to use. And remember, celebrate July as Parks and Rec Month. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 4, presentation on long-term financial planning. Mr. Landon.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is our ongoing series regarding budget and our finances. Chris is off trying to learn how to be an accountant this week, so Lena is going to fly solo and make the presentation today. So Lena, take it from here.
Well, good morning. I feel like after Luann's video that my presentation's not going to be as exciting, but I'll certainly do my best to keep it fun. This is our budget preparation timeline. As you know, we're in June, and we're discussing long-term financial planning today. We'll be back next Tuesday at workshop to talk about property taxes and just go over a little bit about that. And then, of course, in July and August, we'll be going through our budget workshops on into September for our public hearings. Just an overview of today's presentation. We're going to talk a little bit about the background behind long-term financial planning, what it is and why we do it. The goals and objectives for it, some of the assumptions that we use, how we hold ourselves accountable and provide transparency to the public, and also some deliverables. So what is long-term financial planning? Well, the GFOA defines the term long-term financial planning as aligning our financial capacity with long-term service objectives. The planning process uses forecasting. It also provides us with some insight into the future financial capacity for the city. It establishes the groundwork for City Council strategies and goals that we developed. It also helps us achieve long-term sustainability. It's a very important part of our strategic action planning process, which includes, as you know, the budget process. And it also shows our continued dedication to the public to provide them with transparency and accountability. So we don't have a crystal ball as much as I wish we did. So in its place, we need to have a plan. The financial plan looks out 5 years and considers all of our appropriated funds. Although we may not provide information on all the funds, we do take a look at all of them, and we report back on our major operating funds. It's updated as needed to provide direction during the budget process, and it includes an analysis of our financial environment as well as a forecast for our revenues and expenditures. The revenues are looked at, most of our major revenues are looked at on a monthly basis. Our expenditures and all of our revenues are looked at on a quarterly basis at a minimum. That is done with our departments, and we meet with Mr. Landon as well. And, of course, we consider our debt position. The objectives of our long-term financial plan is to continue to improve our financial position, to maintain or improve the service level standards, and to achieve full cost recovery when possible for our services. So this is a list of some of the assumptions and considerations that are used during the financial planning process. I won't read off all of them with you, but I do want to touch base on the first two on the list, the first being the revenue and expenditure projections. I did mention that a little bit in the previous slides. I do want to let the public know that we do publish our quarterly progress report. It is available on the city website, and that does include where we are year-to-date with our budget. So we are looking at that on a regular basis. And a couple of weeks ago, we met with you, City Council, to discuss our revenue sources that are not being used. So that is an important part of our process, and it's something that we will do on an annual basis with you. So as far as accountability and transparency, these are probably terms that you're hearing all the time. It's something that I know Chris and I feel is very important in what we do. Some of the ways that we provide that transparency is through our annual financial audit, and also through our quarterly progress reports as well as our annual progress report. During the progress report process, we basically what we're looking at is we want to ensure budget compliance, that our departments are taking the budget process very serious throughout the year, not just during the planning time. It also holds the departments accountable. So we're having meetings, we're discussing it with them. If they're falling short, we're talking about it and coming up with a game plan of how we're going to move forward. It promotes long-term consideration during decision making, and it also promotes citywide focus on City Council's goals. So some of our deliverables, the top one being, of course, my favorite, the annual budget document. But we also have a document called Measuring Results, which we publish annually, which provides the results of all of our performance measures, and also the annual progress report, as well as the comprehensive annual financial report that is published yearly. The 10-year infrastructure plan, Council, you may recall, staff came to you, I believe it was in February, and reviewed that with you. So again, that's a way that we provide a deliverable to you. Every year we meet with you, we talk about the long-term plan for our capital projects, and the five-year CIP, which is adopted during the budget process. Again, I mentioned earlier that our documents, our quarterly progress reports, are available on the website. All of our documents related to long-term planning is also available on the website. You see up here on the screen kind of a snapshot of what it looks like. The document that was prepared this time last year and presented to City Council is basically our policy document. That is available on the city's website, as well as our 10-year infrastructure plan and some other documents as well. Okay, and this is just a calendar of what's next. So we'll be meeting with you next Tuesday at the workshop to talk about property taxes and continue with the fun into July and August.
Thank you very much. Council, any questions?
Your Honor, I have one comment, if I may.
Please.
For what it's worth, the Board of County Commissioners will start their budget workshop reviews on the 22nd. Of June. I don't have the time, but that's when they're going to start having a workshop on their budget, and it's open to the public.
Thank you.
So you want to see where the rest of your money's going, go there.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments? Very good. Agenda item number 5, a resolution approving phase 2 tasks with Lassiter Transportation. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is something that you've requested at the request of some residents that live on Florida Park Drive. We've divided the study of the Florida Park Drive into two segments, if you will. First of all is existing conditions. What's going on out there right now? And that is something that Sean, our traffic engineer, has completed and is going to report on today. The second phase of this would be to actually hire a traffic engineer to model and predict that if changes were to occur, if you were to make changes, you were to block the street off, you go one way, a variety of possible changes, what would that do to the traffic? Because the traffic's still going to be there. It's a matter of where will it go. So today we are here to present you with our findings of existing conditions. And then you have a proposal in front of you to hire Lassiter Engineering for about $41,000, $42,000. You will see at the end of this that staff believes that that is really not necessary, but that is something that's really up to City Council if you want to proceed. So with that, I'm going to let Sean do his presentation and go from there.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members.
Morning, Chris.
As you guys know, I'm Sean Costello. I'm the city's traffic engineer.
Move it nice and close.
Sean, you're going to need to move. Yes, okay. Please.
All right. Hopefully that's better.
It is.
All right. Thank you. All right. So as Mr. Landon said, this is part of a project for Florida Park Drive to discuss the existing conditions and a proposed traffic study. At the City Council's direction, city staff was to evaluate Florida Park Drive and determine ways to reduce the pass-through traffic. We developed a phased approach for this to evaluate the existing conditions and evaluate alternatives if they're warranted. We begin with phase one, where we evaluated the existing condition. This work was done primarily in-house by staff. We collected all the relevant traffic data, volume, classification counts, turning movement counts at intersections, and speed data. With that information, we did level service analysis for intersections. We collected crash data, and we prepared a report summarizing the results of this analysis. For phase two, that would be an alternative evaluation. The work would be performed by a traffic engineering consultant that's part of under our continuing services contract. As part of their their scope, they would conduct neighborhood meetings, perform what is called travel demand modeling, where they would collect some more data, such as origin and destination, create a base transportation model, and then run some alternatives that we can evaluate.
Excuse me, Sean?
Yes, sir.
The origin and destination data. So I think later in your presentation, you're going to show us a kind of a chart of how traffic builds along the roadway. Mm-hmm. But how does that differ from the origin and destination data that would be proposed in phase two? Does that take a more detailed look at what streets they're actually turning off of and what side streets they turn down?
If we want to get into that kind of detail, yes, we can get that. But I think that what we're kind of looking to accomplish with this is to see what folks are actually passing through, going from Palm Coast Parkway to Palm Harbor Parkway and vice versa.
How does it differ from the counts that you've already collected?
What this does is that this looks specifically at this doesn't just count the vehicles, this actually tracks them. And, you know, where it says that, you know, that license plate number so-so-so started here and then if they get to the next location where there's a counter there, then they'll be marked as passing through that point as well.
So the key to this is the pass-through, that if the vehicle is at Palm Coast Parkway and then ends up also at Palm Harbor, you know that they are passing through and not going to the streets in that neighborhood. If they don't show up at the other end, then you know they turned off into the neighborhood. So then you do the math, and those that got all the way up are cut-throughs. Those that did not would be the balance of the traffic that actually is destination is in the neighborhood. We are not attempting to determine what exactly street they are turning on, but just whether or not they are going to the neighborhood or coming from the neighborhood or if they're cutting through. Make sense?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
At the end of this, what they end up doing is just getting that percentage of vehicles that, you know, that were just a pass-through. And then you apply that to your numbers to determine how many folks really are just there to be in the neighborhood or folks that are just cutting through. And that's it.
Okay.
So, and it really helps with the modeling effort. So that way, if traffic does become diverted somewhere, then it makes it easier to track, okay, well, this percentage will likely go this route or this route or whatnot. So
let me give another example of that specifically. Okay. Let's say you block it off at Palm Harbor so they can't use it as a cut-through. The model will predict how many will you frontier to get over to Old Kings Road to come down to Palm Coast Parkway. And then they'll start saying, okay, this will have an impact of additional traffic on Frontier or Farmsworth or whichever one the model thinks they will use.
As part of the phase two analysis, they would prepare a report summarizing the results of the analysis and then present the findings to the city council. We'll briefly run through phase one. As we know, Florida Park Drive is approximately 2 miles long. There's a 60-foot right-of-way there with two 12-foot lanes, one northbound, one southbound. We have swale drainage along the road on both sides, and we have a sidewalk that's on the west side of the road. There is commercial land use between Palm Coast Parkway eastbound and Faraday Lane, and north of that is predominantly single-family residential land use. As stated earlier, we did collect traffic counts for this. specifically, we did 24-hour classification counts. The information that it gives us is raw traffic counts, and then with that, we take seasonal factors to obtain what's called an annual average daily traffic volume. From these counts, we also get what's known as a peak-to-daily ratio, which is a K factor. You get your directional distribution, which is based off of the distribution of traffic, whether what percentage is going northbound and what percentage is going southbound. You also get your truck factors, too, and primarily you get your T-peak, your truck factor during your peak hour, and your daily truck factor. And also with these counts as well, we can also get vehicle speeds. We also collected five-hour turning movement counts at 9 locations, all located on the west side of the roadway. Data was collected from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. As you see here, these are the locations where the 24-hour classification counts were taken. All of them, again, on Florida Park Drive, between Palm Harbor Parkway and Palm Coast Parkway eastbound. The location 1, 2, and 3 was in the residential area. Locations 4 and 5 represent the commercial area. As you can see for locations 1 through 3, we average our annual average daily traffic volumes are between 5,100 and 7,400. And for locations 4 and 5, it's between 5,800 and 5,200. Our peak to daily ratios, which is something that traffic engineers, you know, really concentrate a lot on, shows that the lower this number is, the more urbanized of an area that we have. You can see also on here our peak truck factors range anywhere from 0.18 to 2%, and for our daily truck factors, you're ranging from 0.7 to just under 2%. Speed data, which we know that was something that was a concern for the area. As you can see, locations 1 through 5 here, primarily locations 1 through 4 were between, and our average speeds were between 30 and 35 miles per hour. Location 5 is a little bit different because it's a short segment that's between two signals. Our speed distribution for locations 1 through 4 is fairly consistent. As you can see, the majority of the speeds that were recorded were between 30 and 35 miles per hour. We had one area where the percentages were a little bit higher at location 4, and that's information that we will share with the Sheriff's Department. With the turning movement counts that we did at the intersections along the west side of the roadway, you can see here that all of them operate at a level of service A in the northbound and southbound direction, except over at Palm Harbor Parkway and at Palm Coast Parkway westbound, where those actually have a stop condition. So, but as you can see here, the roadway operates very well. Then we also looked at the crash data as well over the last 3.5 years. There was 35 reported accidents, the majority of them being rear end. Second to that was angled collisions, and third was collisions with pedestrians, which also included bicyclists. In summary, the traffic volumes range from 5,100 to 7,400 in the residential areas. All intersections operate at an acceptable level of service, C or better. The average speed along the entire corridor was 30 to 35 miles per hour, and there were 35 crashes reported in the last 3.5 years.
Sean, when you say per day, you're talking about a 24-hour period?
Yes, sir. The next part was phase two, where staff was directed to prepare a request for proposal to our traffic engineering firms that are on our continuing services contract. City staff prepared a scope of services with the following tasks. It was to conduct neighborhood meetings to get local input, utilize the travel demand modeling to model alternatives to reduce pass-through trips along the corridor, provide a level of service analysis for Florida Park Drive and the surrounding roadways, and report the results to City Council. Alternative city staff reviewed the RFPs submitted by three of the consultants, and Lasseter Transportation Group was the preferred firm to perform the study. They prepared two fee estimates, and the only difference was just in the way the origin and destination data collection was to be performed. One was going to be to utilize Bluetooth data, and that data would be collected over a 3-day period, or the license plate data collection, which was going to be performed over a 2-day period. In conclusion, the results of the existing conditions analysis illustrates that Florida Park Drive operates at unacceptable level of service, and additional study from the consultant is not required at this time. And staff's recommendations is to continue monitoring the traffic conditions through our citywide traffic counts and to defer further analysis until Florida Park Drive operates at an unacceptable level of service. Questions?
Council questions.
I have a question. So just to be clear, when we say an acceptable level of service, simply means traffic flow.
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's nothing to do with the potential health hazards or noise hazards or anything like that?
No, sir.
Okay. As far as phase one. And that wouldn't be included in phase two either, right?
No, it would not.
Okay.
Other council questions? Mr. DiLorenzo.
Sean, from your experience, can you glean any knowledge from the traffic counts that you've already taken on what percentage may be passed through, or is it too difficult to determine because of the amount of turns off the road, access points?
It's difficult without getting the extra origin and destination information. I've done a lot of traffic studies for the Florida Department of Transportation, and to get that kind of information, you really needed to either utilize some type of modeling, or you actually had to go out there and get the origin and destination data. It was very, very, very hard to just look at traffic counts and know exactly what percentage is doing what.
If I was returning from Matanzas High School and to this neighborhood, to one of the F streets that I could get to off of Old Kings or from Florida Park, are there any other arterials that have sidewalks? Do you know of?
Arterials that, well, I probably can help with that question better. Palm Harbor has a path along the entire distance. When we do the extension, it will also include a path. Old Kings Road, I forget if it's Frontier or it doesn't go all the way up to Matanzas. It will when the widening occurs, but that's years away. The only other street in this area that I believe has a sidewalk or path along it is Florida Park Drive. There aren't any other, definitely none of the residential streets like Frontier or Farmsworth or any of those. They are a typical cross-section, as we would say, with the swales on each side, but no sidewalk.
Okay. The level of service is rated A through F.
Yes, sir.
My understanding is that F means that it's stop and go, that frequent stops, frequent interruptions in the flow of traffic, that there's just too much traffic on the road.
Yes.
A, rarely traveled, infrequent, never have to stop. Since your analysis shows the level of service anywhere between A and C, could you describe what a C level of service looks like? What are we seeing at C level?
A C level of service is where you're able to maintain the speed limit and the amount that you have to stop is still minimal. You're not, you're only stopping when somebody has to make a turn. But you're able to at least maintain the speed limit for that roadway.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other council questions? If not, we'll open the meeting from the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on this agenda item, go up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Name's Steve Carr. All traffic studies should focus on people's well-being, not just traffic. They need to have a thorough report backed by data like from the World Health Organization or EPA that tells about the effects of traffic on people. Right now, we have thousands of cars, hundreds of trucks passing down Florida Park Drive, and these are from 40 to 60 feet from children's bedrooms. Can you imagine that? 40 to 60 feet from their bedrooms? Yes. I measured my house is 55 feet from the road. So I don't know where this 60-foot right-of-way comes from. Evidently, that you own 5 feet of my house. I don't know. but there are studies out there, and it says studies of near roadway pollutant levels showed that concentration pollutants emitted from traffic vehicles were highest right at the roadway and decreased substantially within 300 feet to 500 feet of the roadway. Florida Park Drive homes are less than 100 feet from the roadway. So, and it says the Southern California Children's Health Study of Association Residential Distance to Traffic and Lung Function Development found adverse health effect in children's living as far as 4,000 feet from the road and people living up to 1,500 feet from a heavy traffic are most at health risk from effects of traffic pollution. Yes, we can count the number of cars, but what is it doing to the people? That's what we need to know. There is a solution. Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor Parkway have an intersection. If all traffic that needs to interchange between those two parkways take place at Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor Parkway intersection, it would eliminate all the cut-through traffic through all the residential neighborhood. It wouldn't be shifting traffic to anybody. It would just eliminate it from those neighborhoods. So I'm saying it's about the people. It's not about really about traffic. It's about the people. It's about their health, and it's about their lives. So I really want the city to take a look at the health aspect of that much traffic within 40 to 60 feet of the homes. Thank you.
Before you sit down, Mr. Carr, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I didn't understand your potential solution.
Could you describe that to me again? Yes, sir. Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor Parkway have a connection, intersection. If all the traffic that needs to exchange between the two parkways take place at that intersection, then it will eliminate the traffic going through the neighborhoods. It would eliminate it through all the neighborhoods, not just Florida Park Drive. It won't be shifted.
In other words, you're suggesting that if you're on Palm Coast Parkway eastbound, that you would not turn left onto Florida Park, you'd continue straight until you eventually came to Palm Harbor. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, then what about the people who live off of Florida Park Drive to get home?
Yes.
If you're coming down Palm Coast Parkway and you need to get down to that section like Flintstone, how would you get to that street?
But the people on Florida Park Drive can turn left on Florida Park. The problem is the cut through traffic, eliminating the cut through traffic. But there is a solution there at the park where they intersect.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
I'll make mine a little bit shorter. I live right on Florida Park Drive and Flarestone, right on the corner. People making that turn on that corner, there's hundreds of cars, if not thousands, a day that make that turn. My solution would be a little bit cheaper and simpler to put post signs, no through traffic, on either end and Fleetwood. We discourage some of the non-residents, you know, to take another route or something like that, which may help a little bit, and it should be a lot cheaper than anything I can think of, just no through traffic. And just residents only, cut down on some of it. The traffic on that corner is bad. I have asthma and I have allergies, and the dust is terrible. And my house is just black inside. I just got through cleaning it up thoroughly. And I don't have a man cave. I have a landfill, what it amounts to. So thank you very much. That's about all I can come up with at this time.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting, come back to council. But first, the 60-foot right-of-way, if you've got a roadway that has two 12-foot lanes, that's 24 foot. I'm assuming the 60-foot right-of-way is divided essentially equally on either side of that.
Yes, sir, it is.
So on the west side of the street, you have a sidewalk. You have some semblance of a swale left. Mm-hmm. So 24 from 60, how much right-of-way do we have on each side?
Well, if you
36.
If you take 34, if you take the 12 from 30, you've got 18 feet left on each side. Okay. And that would have your swales and your sidewalk.
Okay. Thank you. Back to city council.
I have some questions, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
So looking at what we're trying to do here is decide whether or not to go into phase two of this particular process. I don't think the information is enough for me to decide. So if we go ahead and we decide where can we move the traffic, what is that going to affect that? My opinion is going to be biased by the fact that all I'm looking at right now is a level of service to the road, but I'm not looking at what does that traffic doing, like Mr. Carr brought up, it says the health factor on that road. Is there, I mean, I live on a street, I'm going to guess 20 cars a day pass my house, you know, if that much. I couldn't imagine 5,000 cars passing my house. I don't know what effect that. I don't know whether it does or it doesn't. It seems to me we're missing a component before we go on to the phase of deciding whether we should move traffic or not. I want to get to the level of determination of, is this something that is inconvenient for the residents of Florida Park Drive? Or is this actually an issue, a problem, a health and or service? So we've determined there is no service issue with the road. So we're saying the road, the flow, everything's good there. Is there a health issue that we're perpetuating by allowing it to continue? Now, if the answer is no, then I don't see, you know, then the arguments are different as to whether we move the traffic or not. I just feel like we're missing that piece.
But we don't have a lot of people coming forward with health issues. There's 165 houses on that road, and 78 of them are homesteaded. So the rest of them are either vacant commercial renters who could move if they weren't happy with that location. So we're dealing with 40-something percent of the people that live on that road, and I've only heard two come up with health issues. I mean, we could do a study of each house, but you'd have to go back to, you know, what point to find out if, since they moved there, they had health issues, if the health issues came from wherever they moved from. I mean, I think you'd have to go by who comes forward and says, I have a health issue, and I didn't have it before, and now I have it.
I'm not considering that a method of determination. I'd look at more of what do national studies say? You know what I mean? People, you know, wake up 10, 15 years later, I don't know, and they die of something, and it could have been related to that, but we don't, you know what I mean? Could not have. I mean, it could be just whatever. But I don't know. I mean, given the design of the environment on that road, given the proximity of the houses to the road, the elevation to the road, you know, these things can be, I'm assuming, have somewhere been determined at what level of traffic moving through at certain speeds, because we have all the data. We know how many cars, we know what kind of speed they're traveling, we know how far the houses are, we know all this. There's got to be a way somewhere to determine what level of health issue is being introduced to those residents or not. You know what I mean? That seems to me to be the point. Because if we do this second study, they're going to come back with recommendations. And we've already had rebuttals to the solutions. And you can't argue those rebuttals for I'd like to have versus we need to have. So right now, all I see is a like to have, because they don't have all the data. But I would like to get to I know this is or this isn't an issue for the residents. It's just an inconvenience. The high level of traffic is not conducive, you know, but not harmful.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
I think, Ms. Shipley, you hit on something, I think, very important that we actually can learn from. Roughly, did you say 40% are in?
I think it's 46%.
So almost half of the homes are not homesteaded.
And they were, it was 68 of those properties sold between 2009 and 2015 when that traffic was already there. And out of those, 27 homesteaded.
So if roughly 50% are not homesteaded and there is a high level of vacancy, then we can understand that perhaps there is a larger problem. But if there is not a high level of vacancy where people have the opportunity to leave the location,
right,
then I think we can understand a lot of information from that.
Of course, were there a high level of vacancy, is it attributable to the economy? Is it attributable to the age and condition of the homes? Is it attributable to the fact you don't want to live on a busy street? Or is it attributable to health factors? The concern that I have relative to health factors, you can't make the traffic disappear. You're going to put it somewhere else. Are you then going to recreate the same problem elsewhere? Now, I look at Mr. Carr makes an interesting point. He says his house is 55 foot from the road edge. The bedrooms typically are at the rear of the house, so add another 20 foot or something like that. Go to Belterre, where there is as much or more traffic at a higher speed, I suspect, and you have homes whose backyards face the road. So their bedrooms are similar in proximity. I'm not sure that there is a solution. Suppose we did some kind of a health study. Then you probably have to do it for every major road in town, and then what?
Well, when you're talking about Belterre, you have the means for a barrier on Belterre, where you don't have the means for a barrier on Florida Park. So most of the houses on Belterre already have vegetation planted or fences up, and you can't do that.
That would eliminate or reduce or mitigate the noise factor. I'm not sure it would.
Yeah, I don't know, but see, this is what I'm saying is this report comes back, and we say, well, we're going to do this, and we're going to move some of the traffic here and here and here. And then you have to stop again and say, well, if we're going to take if we're going to start, we're going to introduce health issues here, here, and here, then, you know.
You've robbed Peter to pay Paul.
And that's what, but if it's simply more traffic on this road and less on this road, and we're kind of divvying it up, and there, you know, again, it's that it's the nice to have versus the need to have, and sometimes, you know, I mean, it sounds to me like if 47% of the people aren't living on that street, there's a problem on that street.
Well, it could also be renters. They could be filled homes. It's just people that choose to live there. You know, I don't know how long leases are, but I'm thinking they had an option to go somewhere else.
But just because they rent the house and they don't own the house doesn't mean we should not consider their health issues.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that those people, let's say after the boom, how many people moved there after this was already there? When they already knew that the traffic was there.
Oh, yeah. Traffic was there 30 years
ago. We had 68 houses out of 165 that were sold from 2009 to 2015. So people are moving there still, seeing the traffic. It would be nice if you didn't have the traffic, but they knew the traffic was there when they bought the homes.
Well, I don't know if I can summarize this, but the phase two is more of the same kind of data.
Right.
It'll tell us more potentially how much cut through there is versus how much is local traffic. It will model where those cars, trucks might go if you did something. Mm-hmm. But that's just more of the same data. We acknowledge that there's a lot of traffic on the road. The study that Lassiter is proposing does not even begin to address the health issues that you're talking about. So, in my mind, that study won't give us any new insights. Yeah. So,
and not only that, but also the point of doing it before the park opens and before the Palm Harbor is the shopping center is completed.
Yes, you're right.
Yes, I do think we should do it over again. Yeah. As a city employee, do it over again after the park and after all the stores are in place, and we can see how much of a difference it makes. But Lassiter really didn't even have an example they could give us, one that they had modeled that was like Florida Park Drive, where it had changed the situation.
Well, I would like to see us move towards understanding the potential health issues. Not going out and hiring anyone, not, you know, but doing it in staff, collecting whatever data we can. We've got good people who can pull that information together. We can get to a level of guesstimation, which then could give us it's close enough here to say maybe we need to invest a few dollars, or they might come up with data that says, you know what, it's not there. So let's just let it go.
Okay. Coming back to council, we have a resolution to approve phase two with Lassiter. Is there a motion to approve? Hearing no motion to approve, the item dies. For lack of a motion, lack of a second.
Your Honor, if I may.
Please.
I'd like to introduce a motion to delay action on Lassiter until after the completion of the Matanzas Woods overpass to I-95 to see what effect that will have on traffic on Florida Park Drive. I'm not opposed to the study. Now is not the right time to do it.
Question for staff. The Matanzas Woods interchange and the two collateral bypasses, how does that completion date compare with our guesstimation of the completion date for Island Walk? Or is Mr. McGuire saying, let's wait until we see whether Matanzas Woods...
We know there's going to be some diversion of traffic, but will it affect Florida Park
Drive? But the question is, if you do a study at the end of the Matanzas Woods interchange, but the shopping center is not completed, then you may well say, well, we still don't have the full picture. No. So I'm just curious, how close are those in juxtaposition as far as completion?
Interchange is scheduled to take about 12 months. So about this time next year, it should be complete. We'll have the park completed by that time. The shopping center is phased in. In other words, Publix will be open in 2015 is what they're predicting. But then the rest of it will probably be, I think, towards the end of 16 is what they're, so it'd be about a year from now, or a year and a half. That's the way I understand it. So I think if we're going to do this again, it would be good to wait for all three of those events to be completed, and then you'd have a better look
at total impact.
Total impact. You know, we can look at each one of those, but if you really want to know total impact, because the opening of the interchange up at Matanzas and I-95 will change some driver behavior. It will drive some people not to come down to Palm Coast Interchange. They will go on up there, and that could change some of the driver behavior too. So all three of those are going to change the whole, and not just Florida Park Drive, but Old Kings Road, et cetera.
Then, Your Honor, I amend my motion to request that the council reconsider this proposal after the completion of the three projects just named by the city manager.
And we would do an existing condition like we did here and then determine whether or not more action is necessary. Is that what we're talking about?
I still don't understand. The level of service may go up, right? But it's probably still not going to go up to the point of creating Fs in that, right? I mean, we know it's good, but we're still missing that determination of, is this an issue? Are we so between now and that point where all the projects are complete, I would like the city council to direct the city manager to have staff look into the health effects of this roadway, specific to this roadway, so that we can understand what if there is a problem. So like I said, a few more cars going through there, I really don't think is going to change. I mean, even if it goes up, it's not going to quadruple or anything like that.
So you think a questionnaire that goes out to the 165 homes on that street saying, when did you move in? What was your health condition
I don't think we need to talk to them at all. I mean, I just want to understand what the effects of traffic on a neighborhood like that are.
For purposes of procedure here, we have a motion to delay, to direct staff to delay, or let's put it together, to implement another level of service study when the projects are completed. That's separate and apart from a study on health issues. What I'd like to find out, and I don't know that Sean is the person to ask, if we had questions about health issues, what kind of study would you do and who would do it?
You need an industrial hygienist.
Something along those lines. So, let's deal with Mr. McGuire's motion first, then we'll come back and take your suggestion second.
Yes, sir.
All right, there is a motion to institute a second level of service study at the completion of those three named projects. Is there a second to that motion?
Mr. McGuire, is that to do a phase one study and then consider a phase two study?
No, it's to consider a phase two study.
Not get new traffic, not what staff completed for this one, not to redo that?
Well, my understanding is the phase two study would involve recapping the numbers as they exist in the current time.
Okay, so it would be to consider a phase two study?
Yes.
To conduct a phase one study and using that data to determine the desirability of a phase two.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you'd need to redo the phase one study and then use that data to see about, consider a phase two study. But I don't want to do any of that until after these three projects are done.
Okay, I will second that motion.
Motion and second. Is there any other additional discussion on that motion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Now, to Mr. Nobile's point, I would suggest that we have somebody, whether it be Sean, whether it be, as Mr. McGuire says, an industrial hygienist, somebody who has knowledge in this area, come back to us and say, here's the kind of study that will give you the data that you want.
You need somebody that uses a dosimeter to test your air samples at various phases. And also there's a mnemonist that would measure your noise levels. And those are the only two I can think of. How does the air quality compare with
other parts of the city?
Many, many, many years ago in a former life, I did studies like that as supervisor of the science departments in 17 schools. There's a company called Draeger that makes, looks like a syringe. You suck air through it. Mm-hmm. It's a chemical in the air, and it tells you levels of this, that, and the other thing. So rather than emotion, well, by consensus, I would say that the council is asking staff to investigate who is qualified to do these kind of health studies, come back to us, tell us what the study would be and what the cost would be at that point. If that's acceptable?
That's acceptable.
Okay. Understood?
Yes. I do want to clarify. I'm fairly confident, although we will confirm. We do not have anybody on staff called.
No, no, no. But I'm sure we have somebody on staff who can find out who can do this.
We can let you know what
it's
would take.
It's going to be a consultant.
Yes. Thank you.
But who is the consultant, and what's the nature of the study, and what's it going to cost?
Okay. Just with that understanding, yes, we'll bring something back.
All right.
Mr. Mayor, before we move
please.
On. Mr. Landon, understanding that it would be difficult to follow through with, but what is the? Why couldn't we put no pass through traffic or no cut through traffic? I know it would be very difficult, you know, for the sheriff's department to actually enforce it. But what is the harm? Is there a harm in putting it up?
Well, once again, it'd be impossible to enforce without stopping everybody and saying, "Where are you going?"
But could it change some behavior?
It may. Once again, it's the same concept of a simpler concept than actually putting up a barrier to stop the cut through and suggest to people to take a different route. It's my opinion, and I don't know if from a code standpoint, but to put up a sign you're not going to enforce.
Well, I didn't say don't enforce, but I don't know how you do.
Yeah, well, we've already talked to the sheriff, even like with trucks, et cetera. You know, the definition of through traffic, as long as they have a destination in Palm Coast, it's really you can't arrest somebody for using a local street to get to a location here in Palm Coast.
So we couldn't enforce that sign?
You have to follow someone.
Mark might be able
to the end.
For the trucks that we know that they're delivering on Palm Harbor.
How do we know that?
If there's the same truck that goes all the time to Palm Harbor, that's something you might be able to know.
Mark, I'm going to defer to
but
you.
All right, before we do that, you're doing exactly what all the other proposals have suggested. You're taking traffic from one road and you're putting it on another road. Robbing Peter to pay Paul. Are you taking a noise issue from here and putting it here? Are you taking a inconvenience from here and putting it here? Are you taking a health issue from here and putting it here?
Okay, I have a different, similar but different idea.
Okay.
Then. Can we have an article in the Palm Coaster? Because we have, you know, I think we have pretty good residents here, and maybe if we can just educate them a little bit on, you know, the difficulties that the neighborhood is experiencing, and if we could just ask you to please use Palm Harbor, you know, even a little can help.
Give everybody a miss.
It's up to, you know, up to City Council. We can obviously ask. To use regulatory signage to ask is not appropriate, but to use a newsletter, the media.
Well, why don't we do this to Mr. DiLorenzo's suggestion? Why don't we ask Cindy or someone to draft such an article, provide a copy to all council members for their consideration?
We can do that.
Since we like what it.
I mean, a campaign of courtesy, you know, could be.
Can't argue with
helpful.
That.
Yep.
The city trucks and the city employee, I know Mike Brennan, we've talked to them. They've already had to spend, whenever we had the parking and built, they went around. We've done community policing stops at the gas stations and all that, asking them to have their clients come on. We've done that verbally. We've never put nothing in the paper like that, nothing to Lorenzo has. But we have tried something. So.
Every little bit.
Can't hurt.
That's it.
Can't hurt. I'm afraid it falls into the same category as the no littering signs, but it can't hurt. It can't hurt. All right. I believe we've dealt with that issue. This brings us to the consent agenda portion of the agenda. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item not on today's agenda. Please come up to the podium, share your thoughts with us, and limit your time to 3 minutes. Sean, you're not part of the public. Sit down.
Oh, six. No, you're under consent. Sorry.
Consent agenda.
Yep.
Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting. I'm sorry. Consent agenda. Yeah, I confused you. You're right.
Yes, okay.
Consent agenda. There is one item, I believe, on the consent agenda. But if anyone from the public would like to speak on that one item, that's acceptable. Seeing no one approach the public portion of the consent agenda, is there a motion to approve the one item on the consent agenda?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now we come to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item not on today's agenda. Please come up to the podium, give us your name, and limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Jack Collin, Palm Coast. First, I'd like to ask, excuse me. I read in the paper that Palm Coast is getting a permit for miscellaneous. Could you explain what a miscellaneous permit is? That's one. Okay. Second is, if the roads are finished on Palm Coast Parkway, why aren't they open? Why is the south side of the parkway still closed when it's complete? I mean, I know, I don't know if you're holding it for a ribbon cutting, but in the meantime, cars can use it. You know, you go up Palm Coast Parkway and you can see where the railway is closed, but it's finished. So I just don't understand why something like that shouldn't be opened up when it's finished. And now, Mr. Nobile, I'll talk to the mayor, because that's what he wants. I lost my thought. I'm going. If you took this job as city council to augment your income, and that's your only reason, I wish you'd get out. Because when you're sitting, there's five of you sitting up there, you control our lives, whether you know it or not. No matter what you do, no matter what you say, controls everything we do in this city. You take our taxes, you take our money. You tell us what color our house is going to be painted. You tell us how high our grass can be. Everything in our lives is controlled by you five people. So if you are going to take this job just to augment your pay and have a little more extra money in your pocket, just turn in your resignation and we'll have another election. Mm. And if you were controlling one area of this city, how would you get your information? If you didn't have a city manager, who would do that for you? Now, we've been lucky. This city has been lucky because we've had two city managers that did very well for us. See, but you know, to contradict, to say something that you sometimes I wonder if you know what you're talking about. To say something that.
What's something?
Oh, I'm not getting in discussion because it doesn't work that way.
No.
I'll give you an opportunity.
No, I'll take it, trust me.
Yeah, well, I'm losing anything, so I'm going to quit.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
this.
Lewis McCarthy, on to a lighter subject. How is the wear at Belterre and Pine Lakes coming? I noticed that they're bringing in more of those pilings, and the hole is getting deeper and deeper, and looks like sections. I'm trying to figure out how is it working? Is it going to be step down or what? Every time I think that they're getting ready to stop, they bring in more stuff. But I just wanted to know about that. And also, for anybody who wants to know how is the City Hall working, go on the website. The latest pictures are, and it's 105 of them going backwards. It's really enlightening for anybody who, you know, I told cousins of mine who don't particularly live here to get on that website and look at it and see how a City Hall is built. And it's tremendous. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Next speaker. So you don't approach the podium. We'll close the public portion meeting. We'll come back to council. But first, Mr. Landon, miscellaneous permit.
I don't know what he's referring to. We have a variety of permits. I suspect it's going to be something minor like a fence permit or something, but he's going to have to give me more information. Unless Nestor or Steve, anybody back there have any idea?
There is a permit category called miscellaneous.
Okay,
but
you get the permit.
That means it doesn't fit in some other category.
Right, it didn't fit into something else. But I don't know what's being built.
Yeah, I don't even. He'd have to.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we can find out. If you get specific information, we'll find out what it is.
Okay, the second issue raised about Palm Coast Parkway being finished. Actually, the lanes, the additional lanes, you see that there's paving, but if you'll notice, the paving is about yay far, an inch or so below the existing paving. It's my understanding that at some point when all of the peripheral work, all of the side work, all the barriers, all the sidewalks are done, they're going to mill the existing pavement down to the level of that new pavement that you see and then repave the entire thing. If you were to try to pave the additional lane, put the finished layer of paving on, you would have this discontinuity between the other lanes. You'd wind up with one of those bumps in the road. If that's not a correct analysis, please let me know.
Yeah, that's very much correct. I'd add to it that once they finish the work on the sides, we also have some median work to lengthen the left turn lanes, et cetera. So there will be a shift of the traffic through lanes over towards the side where they can work in the medians. And so our goal has been, I think, met the whole time during the day, that we've kept two through lanes open, which is quite a feat. And I think the contractor should be congratulated for that. He's had to close down to one lane, but we've done that at night. So, but we won't see three lanes until, as Mayor, you've indicated, they've done that final lift across the whole street.
And lastly, can you give us an update on the weir at Pine Lakes?
Yes, I was briefed on it yesterday. It is a tough construction site is what they're telling me. They've got hard pan they're running into, and then there's the next time they try to drill a piling further up the hill, it goes in very easy. And so there's different construction methods to get through the hard pan versus the softer soil. And yes, it you will see the variation, but they are moving forward. It is slower than they had hoped because of the underground condition, but we are making good progress.
And Mr. Lennon, the reason that the weir blew out is because the previous contractor did not put his pilings deep enough. Water got underneath the weir and eroded it over a period of time until it just blew. So
right.
you have to find a hard surface to establish your base for pouring concrete.
Yes.
My guess is they're about half done.
Yeah. And that's just driving the pylons. And after
that's
that,
right.
we've got fill, and we'll do the concrete cap and et cetera. So, it's actually kind of fascinating to watch the progress on how these weirs are constructed.
During the demolition, if you will, of the first go-round, there supposedly was a forensic engineer.
Yes.
Yep. Have we had a report from that forensic engineer yet? In other words, is Mr. McGuire right on target that it was the pilings were not deep enough, or were there some other
issues? Well, that's where my information came from, was the forensic engineer.
They were not driven deep enough. We're now getting a better feel as to why. In other words, the contractor hit a hard pan and decided, okay, good enough. There were some of the panels were actually split, damaged underground, and that also contributed to water being able to get through. So, yes, it was determined that the construction was a major cause. We're also determining that just the condition, it's a tough location, and therefore we're taking extra caution this time and taking extra steps so this won't happen again. Yes, I'll give you an example. Where the soil's real soft, we're going to interject some that flowing concrete down there so that it helps make sure that we don't have the problem we had before. Those are kind of little precautionary things that are above and beyond what we normally do. And then the hard pan, they call it, they jet it in. They actually have to do some extra steps to get them in. We're doing those versus just stopping.
Okay. Thank you. Discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Ms. Nobile, I'm going to start with you because I think you probably want to respond to.
Yeah, quick little response. I wasn't going to bring it up for a few weeks now, but first of all, excuse me?
I don't want to hear you.
Wow.
Please, that's inappropriate.
The media and other people, like Mr. Carroll has brought up, has said things that I want to do, which are not true. They didn't come from my mouth. They came from someone else, some straw position. I have never stated that I want to replace the city manager. I have never stated that I want to replace Richard Adams or Chris Quinn. I have never said those words. But somebody else did. Somebody else said, Mr. Nobile wants to. And instead of a phone call to me or an email to me saying, what is this? Is this what you want? You believe what other people want to say. And that's fine. I really doesn't bother me. But I'm going to give you my position today, which I hadn't planned on. My position is that City Council does not play a deep enough role in the day-to-day operations of Palm Coast's functioning. I do not and would not propose a change on the employee side of Palm Coast in any way. I don't believe there are any needs for those changes. But I do believe that City Council needs to play more of a role in the direction and vision of Palm Coast from the day-to-day operations. That's what my position is. It has nothing to do with the city manager. It has nothing to do with Mr. Landon, for first place, because his name is mentioned a lot. I think Mr. Landon's doing a great job. I've told Mr. Landon he's doing a great job. I have no doubt his professionalism, his knowledge, and his skills are required in the position to run this city. But the city needs elected officials to be more accountable to what happens in the day-to-day. And that's what I propose. I would like to suggest to all of you listening in here, if you hear Mr. Nobile said something, your best response would be to call me, send me an email, and say, hey, I heard this. What's your position on that? I'll either meet you for coffee, send you a response email, whatever you want. But please don't assume my position based on what someone else has said. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Anything else under?
Nope, I'm good.
Mr. McGuire.
Last night at the Board of County Commissioners, the situation that came down relative to what's going on over at the airport and the city of Palm Coast's role in it came to a head. I suggested to the BOCC and to Mr. Coffey that we do not have a cohesive interlocal workforce and brainstorm some ideas as to how we could bring this to closure. It wasn't my intention to do so, but I felt compelled to get up and speak because the Board of County Commissioners teed off on the city of Palm Coast with all kinds of stuff, some of it going back years, that they felt where the city of Palm Coast, in their eyes, had treated them badly. And the reason I'm bringing this up now is that, and it really tags in somewhat with what Mr. Nobile is saying, is we do not have a good working relationship with the BOCC, no matter how you slice it. You'll never see any of them at the city council meetings. I rarely get any correspondence from the BOCC when they think that something needs to be addressed. And what's happened out at the airport has been mulling around for 7 months without a conclusion. So Nate McLaughlin suggested that maybe we should have a combined workshop between the two bodies. I'm not opposed to that, but I told him that wasn't my decision to make. But I think this is symptomatic of the ineffective working relationship that exists between the BOCC and the city council. As I said last night, I think it's shameful that a group of people that are dedicated, that are committed, such as we are here, and that care about what's going on could have let this thing go as far as it did without bringing it to a conclusion. So I'm just bringing you up to date at what happened last night. It was, I thought it was pretty sad. Thank you.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
I wasn't at the BOCC meeting, but I read an article about it, and I would say a joint workshop might be necessary for us to, not just that, but we haven't met in quite a long time. I don't think the last time was about the
2010.
The roadways up and around the Matanzas Interchange. That was those meetings were fruitful through a lot of hard work from staff after those meetings. A lot of those solutions were able to be found, and I would say probably a good time to sit down again.
Thank you. Ms. Shipley.
No, nothing.
Is council of the opinion that a joint workshop would be of value?
I am of the opinion that a joint workshop, if for no other reason than to establish some ground rules of how should we interact with each other when there appears to be no progress being made on things that benefit our citizens. I'm not in favor of, I'm sorry, Jason, I would not like a TPO where you got 20 people sitting around a table with no agenda that just feel they've got to say something.
Mr. Landon, please take that under advisement.
Okay.
If it was something, it would need to have a clear agenda. And
agreed.
Yes. Yeah. Meeting for the sake of meeting accomplishes
no,
nothing.
No.
The issue right now, I don't know. It may be helpful. I mean, we're just needing a reply from the county. We need documents from the county that we haven't seen for years. So maybe if you could get the county commission to help with that, that would be helpful. But I will give you examples. How long has it been since the sewer project has been online for Beverly Beach on the beach site? We still do not have executed easement for a pump station.
That means we've got multi-million-dollar facility there without actually having the easement to allow for it. It's usually the type of thing that you require before you start construction. Trying to be helpful and cooperative, we got started, still don't have that. Those are the kind of things that it does become frustrating in how we can, silly little details, but finally have said, no, enough is enough. Capacity fees, you know, you all approved the interlocal agreement, but made it very clear that the county needed to come up to date on their all their utility fees prior to us moving forward. They've been aware of it for years. We still haven't been told the check is in the mail, but we still don't have the check. And as per the instruction of City Council, I'm not moving forward with executing that agreement until they fulfill those obligations. And that's our side of the story, is that we still don't have an easement document to attach to it that has been concluded. Although we put a lot of effort in trying to get there with the help of our city attorney and et cetera. So, yes, it is it's sad, I think, is a good term for it.
I would postulate, Mr. Landon, that when you reach a point that the county administrator and the city manager are at loggerheads and the thing is bogged down, this is the time to focus some sunshine on it. In a public meeting with the media present, it's pretty hard to get up and say, well, you did this and you did that, unless it's so.
Yep. And I will send you all the background. You will. There's quite a bit of background, so you'll have that. And I would suggest that if you want an agenda, then this would be appropriate if we can't get it resolved here in the next few days.
There's certainly some confusion about what's going on, because on the same day, I ran into one county commissioner in the morning that said, look, we're still struggling with this interlocal agreement. Can you help? We need to talk about it some more. And I said, sure. And later in the day, I saw another county commissioner. I said, I thought we're all good on this interlocal agreement. He said, yeah, I think we are. So I think everyone needs to sit down and have a conversation about
what's going on. Well, everybody except Charlie Erickson teed off on the city, and they spared nothing.
And
I'm going to suggest, Mr. Landon, if you will provide City Council with a specific background on this issue, the airport water line issue,
yes,
then we will have some better information about what the issues really are.
Yeah, I'm talking to Bo even this morning. You know, he went back and he's compiled that, seeing this coming. You know, we have documented what we needed before this even came to City Council. It was not ready. The interlocal didn't have all the attachments ready. At the time, we said, this is what's left, still needs to be completed. City Council approved it with the understanding and direction to us that we'd have those. So I will give you all that background so you can see few details.
Can you have it to us by the next workshop?
I'll have it to you before the end of the day.
Then I think at the workshop we can discuss this and make some recommendations.
If time is of the essence, which that's what it sounded like,
it is.
Perhaps the administrators, the county chair, and yourself could sit down and try to get things ironed out more quickly. I don't want to take myself out of the process, but if time is truly of the essence, we should at least consider that.
If that interlocal agreement,
I'll defer to Mr. Reichman as to whether that's appropriate.
These are agreements that have already been approved by both bodies, I understand. So it's just some language, right?
Well, let me see if I can understand the context. Try to get a big picture, and this may be for my benefit, so I can answer your question, but also for the benefit of the public. My understanding is that the interlocal we're talking about is necessary to allow utilities, potable water and wastewater, to be provided to the county by the city. And the reason that that's necessary through this process of an interlocal is because normally, pursuant to our code, if we're going to provide utilities, you have to bring your property into the city, you have to annex. One of the exceptions to that requirement is what we're doing, we're trying to do, which is this interlocal agreement. So this interlocal agreement, if once it's signed, will allow the city to construct, or the county, I don't know who's going to actually do the work, but someone's going to put in some pipes, in some easements, which need to be executed from the county to the city. to allow potable water and wastewater to be provided to the airport so they can loop their system. They can loop their system, and then, and that will allow greater density of development of the airport. That's my, in a simply put, that's my understanding of what we're trying to achieve here. All right, so this interlocal agreement has already come to the city, and the city conceptually approved this interlocal agreement, consistent with the purpose I just described. And when it came to the city council some time ago, I can't tell you the exact, but it's got to be a couple years ago.
Probably a year ago.
All the exhibits weren't complete. For example, the engineering plans weren't complete. And then there was this the easement, which was an Exhibit G, I believe. Bo, correct me if I'm wrong. Exhibit G that needed to be done. I mean, you know, if you can put pipes in the ground, someone else's land, you want to have the right so that, you know, people's names change, positions change, and you want to make sure you have something that's permanent. Those were two documents that at the time that came to this council or a private council a year ago were not done. It's my understanding that the engineering has just been completed. The engineering study has just been completed. And then there was this third issue, which was the city manager spoke about, which was this payment of fees that are due as part of this, the normal part of this process. Nothing unique to Palm Coast and Flagler County. This is what happens when you do this. And you've heard the city manager discuss that part of this process. And then the last thing was his Exhibit G, which was this easement. And there has been some ongoing discussions about the appropriate form for that easement. And it's been my understanding as of yesterday that staff with the county and the staff and the city have been working through that and are at a point where, as of yesterday, I received some documents, and I'm asked for my blessing, and we'll get that done. So the bottom line is that this matter is pretty much ready to go. It's taken a long time, and there's been some disagreements associated with it. Now, Mayor, to your point, is there anything legally preventing the chairman of the county commission and you getting together with staff, however you want to define that, and trying to work through any remaining details such that they may be, given my last discussion? Absolutely not. There's nothing legally preventing that.
With the understanding that neither the chairman or the board of county commissioners nor the mayor of Palm Coast can act unilaterally.
Absolutely not.
Any agreement, any discussion is subject to ratification
by the
two boards.
To the extent that there is a conclusion reached that the interlocal would need to come back to the city council or the county commission for final approval because of the changes that have been made since it last came to this body, it would need to come back here.
Okay, Mr. Landon, then, to this point, give us the background information. Yesterday, if you can, tomorrow, if you can't do yesterday, and suggest to Mr. Coffey, and I will contact the chairman of the board and suggest that a four-party sit-down might expedite this.
I think that sounds like a great idea. Something to move this forward.
That's fine. All right.
Yeah, they're going to lose grant money if they don't get this thing done pretty soon.
To suggest that's on the city with all the effort we've been putting forward to try to get it done is inappropriate.
I'm not casting any aspersions on the city, but the fact remains that there's a considerable sum of money on that airport project that's hanging in the balance pursuant to this agreement.
They know what they need to do.
What I do not want this thing to do is degenerate into finger pointing, but give us the background information, make that suggestion to Mr. Coffey, and I will contact the chairman, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you.
Did I get all council members? Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
I'm all talked out.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
Well, this being the second meeting in June, it's kind of hard to believe we're already at the second meeting in June. Wanted to make the announcement about 4th of July activities. Luann already talked about it in her presentation, but our fireworks at Central Park will be Friday, July 3rd, and then, of course, Flagler Beach and the big fireworks on the beach will be on the 4th, Saturday night. So hopefully you all get to get out. We'll also have a ceremony the Friday morning, July 4th, at Heroes Park, our standard 4th of July ceremony at Heroes Park that morning. So I don't have the details in front of me, but hopefully people can get out for both of those. Mayor, that's all the announcements I have right now, unless you had any questions about projects, et cetera, anything you want an update on?
Just a correction. In my calendar, I have our Heroes Park by Dawn's Early Lights ceremony, 8 a.m. on Saturday, July 4th.
I think I said Friday, July 4th. It is Saturday, July 4th.
Saturday,
yes.
July 4th.
Yes.
Play a doubleheader.
Thank you. The fireworks are Friday night. The ceremony at Heroes Park is Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, 8 a.m.
Yes.
Your Honor, where do we get our little parts that we're going to do?
Good question. I'll let you know as soon as I find out.
Okay, because I'd rather do mine from memory than read it from a piece of paper.
Cindy can help after the meeting. She will fill you in.
Mr. Vice Mayor?
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Too soon.